At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
At the UPS store, we know being a small business owner means holiday time is still go time. Still get those orders shipped time. And still re-up on stamps and supplies time. That's why this upcoming holiday, while others close up shop, we'll be open. And happy to help you keep being unstoppable. Come into your local store today. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS store. Be unstoppable.
This is continuing coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
See how things develop beforehand. So, Mr. Iannetti, I can tell you right now, I'm not going to allow you to open on this because I need to see how the evidence comes in.
It's not part of my opening.
Okay. Who would you intend? I see you have the Lopalito brothers on the witness list. I think that goes far further than I would allow. But who do you intend to get the testimony in through and how?
Through Sergeant Lang himself. I think we need to be afforded the ability to cross-examine him. Once that's done, we may need
If he denies it, and we'll figure that out.
But I think the first step is allowing us to inquire as to his relationships and the connection that he has to the family and this incident that occurred.
So you can certainly inquire as to his relationship with the family. It's the incident. I need to see just reading of everything that I've read. Sergeant Lank doesn't have it. His testimony isn't as lengthy as other witnesses, right?
I don't think that that's necessarily true, Your Honor, as far as our cross-examination.
Okay, but for his direct, is not as lengthy as other witnesses.
I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. So, all right, so go ahead. So through him, through Chris Albert?
Through him, potentially through Chris Albert as well, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. So Mr. Iannetti's not going to open on this, and he said he wasn't planning on it anyway. So let's see how the evidence develops. It may be that we have a voir dire of Sergeant Lank and Chris Albert beforehand. Okay, so I'm not going to take any action on this right now.
Okay.
But I'm not denying it as the Commonwealth's requesting me to do.
Thank you,
Your Honor. We'll see where we go with this, okay? All right, so now let's deal with the Trooper Proctor part.
So, Trooper Proctor, Your Honor, in regard to NEI investigation, which we have not received any material in regard to other than its existence. And I want to be clear on that because I think counsel might be a little confused by some material that we provided to them. So there were some interviews in regard to any sort of areas of potential bias with regard to Trooper Proctor and certain members of the Albert family. That was something that we did. So we had asked and a couple of captains from the state police who are completely divorced from the investigation and completely divorced from our office conducted interviews with regard to Trooper Proctor and a few of the other civilian witnesses.
Okay. How recently? I mean, it's all recent. When was that?
That was, I think, all discovery related to that was provided to counsel the week prior to trial.
Okay.
But they were done sort of in the weeks leading up to that.
Is that part complete?
Yes.
Okay.
So as far as the IA investigation goes, just the mere fact that there is an IA investigation, the Commonwealth would submit is not an appropriate area for cross-examination, and particularly when it's an open investigation, there are no findings, and falls squarely within McFarland and Graham. And I understand what the court's comments before about, you know, them being primarily discovery cases, and I would agree with that. But they also go to discovery cases as far as what, so if something can't be ordered to be provided in the course of discovery, then it's, I would submit, inferentially inadmissible. So what I'm suggesting with this motion, what I'm arguing in this motion, is that whereas there is no findings of liability, there's no findings of any wrongdoing or anything of that ilk, just sort of putting out there that there's an open IA investigation without anything more, because nothing else exists at this point.
Why wouldn't it go to his bias and his motive? If he's under investigation, why wouldn't he have the motive to testify favorably, or why doesn't it go to that? Maybe not the fact that it's IAD, but just there's an ongoing investigation that he's aware of, that he's involved. And you know, I don't know if his job depends on it. I don't know that. Maybe there's not enough to know. But why isn't that motive and bias on his part? Do you think that's prohibited by Graham and McFarland?
I do, and just for that specific, because essentially what it allows a defendant to do is to pursue a line of questioning that they have no idea what that line of questioning is or what it will eventually be. And it could eventually turn into nothing, and to allow that sort of in premature of the court to allow that sort of questioning into an area that is completely unsettled and completely there's no evidence to substantiate other than the fact that it exists without any sort of finding, without any sort of evidence to support it. I mean, that there's, we don't have any evidence as far as what that is or that it even pertains to this case. So with regard to all of that, I understand, you know, that outside of McFarland and outside of Graham, that there are other avenues, as the court was alluding to, as far as motive, as far as bias, as far as things of that nature. But when it's just so scant as far as what that is, it versus sort of the connotation behind those questions, I just think it's unfair to the Commonwealth. It's unfair to the witness to be put in that position when there's really no information available.
All right. What do you say, Ms. Little?
Your Honor, I think that ADA Lally's representation that we don't know what this investigation is about is disingenuous, to say the least.
Why so? Why? Is it something in the information that you've received?
Yes, Your Honor.
From Mr. Lally?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. So can I get a copy of that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
So, as the court knows, first of all, Graham and McFarland deal with the Commonwealth's mandatory discovery obligations, right? Those courts also very specifically state that there's mechanisms outside of those mandatory discovery obligations for defendants to obtain information that's relevant and admissible at trial. That's why we filed a Rule 17 motion requesting these disciplinary records, and that's why that was granted.
It was granted because the Commonwealth did not object.
So, regardless, we've obtained those records, and the cases that Mr. Lally continues to cite do not stand for the proposition that that's the only mechanism by which information can be produced at trial. Those are discovery cases. They are not admissibility cases. Pursuant to that request, we have received information discussing the IA investigation at which Trooper Proctor is being questioned specifically about this case. This is not an instance where we're questioning whether or not there's a basis for an IA investigation. It's clear. This investigation was predicated on the materials that were produced to the Commonwealth by the federal authorities in this case.
And initiated by the Commonwealth. The IAD investigation was initiated by the DA's office, correct?
Well, as far, and just to correct what I certainly didn't mean to impute that this case had absolutely no bearing or there was no
I didn't think you did.
But what I was saying with that is we don't know what the full extent of that is. But as far as what counsel is, what the court's question as far as the IED, it was something that our office had spoken to. We felt we had a duty to disclose to state police legal counsel, and then they refer it to the IA, and that's how that investigation began. As it pertains to what counsel is talking about, that has nothing to do with IA. So the materials that the Commonwealth has provided, that was completely separate investigation initiated by the district attorney's office.
Okay.
For that.
Okay.
The IA investigation came on the heels of this information being produced to the Commonwealth. This is not a situation in which we're really questioning what the basis of that investigation is. The Commonwealth has in its possession numerous materials that suggest there has been significant misconduct on the part of Trooper Proctor. That will come out at trial.
However,
through cross-examination.
What if they don't call Trooper Proctor?
We will call Trooper Proctor.
To impeach him?
Yes.
All right, so be prepared to argue that. I don't know. He's on the witness list. He's the first person on the witness list. They're probably calling him. I'm just hypothetically throwing it out there.
He's conducted every single step of this investigation.
With others, right?
Excuse me?
With others?
Sometimes,
but he is the primary investigator in this case. And I think it's very, very important for the court, and I think you noted correctly, that bias and motive are absolutely critical to Ms. Reed's right to defend herself at trial. We have to be able to explore those issues. And in order for Trooper Proctor to testify, he has a motivation to testify in a certain way to avoid liability in this pending IA investigation. So I think it's unfair to tie our hands behind our back and not be able to question him about this, because it directly drives his bias and motive in this case and gives him reason to testify in a certain way, knowing that he could face career consequences if he doesn't.
Do you intend to try and open on this, Ms. Giannetti? Because I need more information.
I'm not going to mention the IA investigation in my
okay.
statement.
All right, so Ms. Tilalli, if you can get me that information that you mentioned that you
sure.
had sent to counsel, I'll take a look at that. It may well be the fact that there's an investigation without what the nature of the investigation is, but that there's an important investigation, and if you can show me in advance that his job may depend on it, things of that nature, there may be cleaner ways to allow this testimony in. So, all right, so we need a little time. I need to read those materials.
Sure. And,
okay.
and for the court's edification, I don't anticipate he's sort of towards the middle, I would say.
Okay. All right. Good. And the more fully the record's developed, and the easier to rule on some of these motions. I just want to give you all some ideas so you know how to prepare for the next 2 weeks. So, all right. So not in your openings on either one of these, Ms. Giannetti, but you agree to that. So this is still under advisement. It may be certainly with Lank or Sergeant Lank of voir dire of Sergeant Lank and of voir dire of Chris Albert. We'll see how the evidence develops, and I'll read more about the information that the Commonwealth has provided. So 318, also it's 28 bolded from the Commonwealth. All right, so Commonwealth's motion in limine to admit, this is, you know what, I don't have a number on this one, Jim. Commonwealth's motion in limine to admit results of defendant's blood draw at Good Samaritan Hospital and resulting serum conversion and retrograde extrapolation.
Judge, that's paper 339.
All right, and the defendant's is 289. It's the addressing the same issues. Yeah, I told the Commonwealth to put this in writing. So I guess it's defendant's motion, so I'll hear from the defense. Your motion 289.
Thank you, Your Honor. With regard to that, we've put most of our argument in the paper, so I don't want to rehash all of those. The issue is really the foundational issue, not the extrapolation. The extrapolation is sort of a sort of a garbage in, garbage out argument like computers. We think that the underlying blood draw did not follow the proper protocols that it should have followed. Therefore, the veracity of that particular blood draw is at issue.
All right. Can I just ask, the Commonwealth intends to have witnesses here to testify to that, right? How the blood was drawn, all of that?
The Commonwealth would have the doctor that ordered it, the blood draw, the nurse slash nurse practitioner. I summons both as far as who took the blood, and then the director of the lab at the Good Samaritan Medical Center.
Okay.
What I hope to...
So let me get back to Mr. Jackson, and then I'll hear you on that. I just wanted that. I'm not sure we had all that information when you filed the motion, but does that change anything, Mr. Jackson?
It doesn't, because the individuals that did the blood draw, it wasn't done in an accredited manner. I'm not arguing with the fact that the blood draw was taken, that somebody with a phlebotomist actually took the blood, but it wasn't done with the protocols or the accreditation that's required under Massachusetts state law and the Massachusetts State Police Crime Lab. Their protocols were, I apologize, their protocols were breached internally, and given that breach, we believe that any extrapolation based or founded upon those faulty blood draws, those unaccredited blood draws, are suspect as well. So the sum and substance is that you can't trust the extrapolation if it wasn't an accredited and a foundationally solid blood draw to begin with.
So if all the witnesses are here for cross-examination, why doesn't that go to the weight of the evidence instead of the admissibility?
Because we think that the admissibility is based on the protocols that the Massachusetts State Police have put in place. If they didn't have accreditation protocols, it wouldn't mean anything. It probably would go to the weight, not the admissibility. I think the admissibility is predicated on their own rules. They don't get, in our view, they don't get to break their own rules and then say, oh, well, let's just let it go to the weight, not the admissibility. We believe that it's important enough that it shouldn't ever come in front of the jury in the first place, notwithstanding the fact that we could obviously cross-examine them on the lack of accreditation. We think that it rises to the next level of not being trustworthy, and therefore it's overly prejudicial.
Okay. Mr. Lally, doesn't this happen in hospitals across Massachusetts on a regular basis?
It does, and just to be clear, nobody's breaking anybody's own rules. This wasn't blood work that was taken by anybody at the lab or tested at the lab. It was taken at the hospital, tested at the hospital, and what the technician or the forensic scientist from the Office of Alcohol Testing is doing is essentially mathematical calculations based on that result. So I would submit it goes exactly to the weight of the evidence. It's certainly fertile ground for cross-examination or argument by counsel. But as far as it being admissible, it's certainly admissible. This is what happens in every case. Whether or not Good Samaritan Medical Center's lab is ANAB accredited or anything of that nature is irrelevant. It has nothing to do with the state police strictures, because they're not the ones who actually conducted the testing of what was in the blood.
All right, do you want to respond?
I just wanted to refresh the court's recollection. I mentioned this at the last hearing, but just one element of the problem is in the result. The extrapolated result was 124% swing. In other words, we extrapolated based on the blood draw.
Yeah, I know what it means.
And that's just massive. I've never seen a swing that big. It's, you know, you pull somebody over. Well, they
sounds like a great area for cross-examination.
I think it will be.
Okay.
But if it's not admissible in the first place because it's inherently untrustworthy, then you could save me my breath.
Yeah. I don't see how this doesn't come in.
I'll submit, I don't want to beat a dead horse. I just think that it's so unreliable that it shouldn't be put before the jury, and we run the risk of prejudicing the jury in a way that we can't sort of unring that bell. Yes, we can cross-examine, but I don't think that the underlying blood draw is foundationally solid enough.
Mr. Lally, were you planning on using this in your opening?
I don't have to.
All right, so why don't we wait, and if need be, we'll have... let's wait until it gets closer to these experts or the folks from the hospital testifying. If we need to have a short voir dire, you need to remind me to do that, Mr. Jackson, okay?
Thank you for that, Your Honor. Appreciate it.
All right. Okay, so the last area I have is sort of logistics and sequestration. So Let me... So the Commonwealth filed a motion initially. You know what? We'll hold off on the logistics regarding the audiovisual assistant. So there was a motion in limine for sequestration that I allowed regarding the family. So the victim's brother, Paul O'Keefe, the sister-in-law, Erin O'Keefe, the niece and nephew can attend the trial after their testimony. So that motion 293 is allowed. I understand that perhaps, well, I was going to also allow Mr. O'Keefe's father, who appears for some reason on the defendant's witness list. He is exempt also by me from the sequestration order. All right, so that's John O'Keefe Sr. So I just added that in. So Mr. Clerk, 293 is allowed with the addition of Mr. O'Keefe Sr. So the Commonwealth has filed a two-part motion, a motion for offer of proof regarding calling the elected sitting district attorney of Norfolk County and sequestration order if he is permitted to be called. This also includes Stephen Nelson, who is the victim witness person. So why don't I hear you, Mr. Lally or Ms. McLaughlin? I'll hear you on this motion.
Yes, Your Honor. So the reason for this motion is, as the court noted, they appear on the defendant's witness list. Neither of them, I believe, has received a summons in regard to it, so there's no motion to quash because there's no summons to quash. But with respect to each, as the case law is abundantly clear, in order for these witnesses from a prosecution team to be subject to being called as witnesses by the defense, the Commonwealth is just seeking some sort of proffer whatsoever as to what areas they can testify and to, and only they can testify to. So if it's information that the defendant can elicit either through direct testimony or cross-examination from, and I would submit whatever, I would believe that whatever testimony they seek from either of these witnesses, they could get ample testimony from a multitude of other witnesses. Specifically, the only point that was raised as sidebar during impanelment was with reference to the district attorney testifying as to whatever issues reported issues of conflict or removal of Cam Police Department from the investigation. Certainly those are questions I think far more appropriate for members of both the Cam Police Department, members of the State Police CPAC Detective Unit. The head of that unit, Lieutenant Tully, is one of the Commonwealth witnesses who will be testifying, and I think he's in a far better position to testify to that than Mr. Morrissey. But regardless of that, what the case law is very clear about is that number one, the victim witness advocate is a part of the prosecution team and in these sort of areas stands in sort of the same stead as a prosecutor himself. Secondly, with respect to whatever areas of examination are expected or anticipated from these two witnesses, there has to be some sort of proffer of what that anticipated testimony would be that they can't get from some other witness. Certainly Mr. Nelson has been the victim witness advocate working on this case.
So why don't you explain to me, I did look at the victim's Bill of Rights, but why don't you explain to me exactly what a victim witness advocate does, the nature of the relationship with the victim's family. I know there was a lot of discussion about this in grand jury minutes that I read about scheduling appointments, meeting with people, things of that nature.
So, I mean, what to say assist, I think, is doing it somewhat of a disservice as far as the prosecution. It's someone who works directly with the prosecutor on virtually every step of the case, as far as investigation, as far as pending motions, as far as trial.
Has Mr. Nelson been the advocate throughout the pendency of this case?
Yes, Your Honor. So for over 2 years, has been the point of contact with the family, has been with the family at each of the court dates, assistant and very helpful as far as coordinating things with the family, coordinating meetings, scheduling meetings with witnesses in preparation of grand jury, in preparation of trial, has communicated thoroughly with regard to issues of scheduling and all of those types of things.
Does he take calls like late at night from witnesses? Does he have a personal relationship with witnesses governed by a professional relationship? Is he somebody that they are able to call? There's been a lot of allegations of harassment of witnesses.
Correct.
Are those folks able to call him when something like that happens?
That is the person that they would call.
Okay.
Yes. So I think the bulk of the communications and conversations with witnesses who are not members of Mr. O'Keefe's family over the course of the last couple of years have been in relation to that issue specifically, as far as harassment, threats, intimidation, things of that nature, that he's dealt with admirably in relation to those witnesses.
Okay. All right, who's arguing this for the defense?
I will, Your Honor, and I think it makes sense to separate out D.A. Morrissey and victim witness advocate Steve Nelson in this
argument. Okay, let's start with Mr. Nelson.
Sure. So, Your Honor, the defense acknowledges that there are often times where, let's say, a victim witness advocate sits in on an interview with a witness or an alleged victim, but there are other witnesses in the room to whom or who could testify about the content of that, and that doesn't necessarily make it proper to call a victim witness advocate during a trial. I acknowledge that. I also acknowledge that the victim witness advocate has a job to do, and it puts them as sort of an intermediary between the prosecutors and the police and alleged victims.
So when you were a prosecutor, you worked very closely with victim witness advocates.
I did.
Okay.
Yes, and it's my experience being on the other side that informs my knowledge of that. But this is a different case with regard to one specific issue. And that is that we learned as a result of the federal materials that victim witness advocate Steve Nelson had conversations with Brian Higgins and we believe Brian Albert, but Brian Higgins talked about him specifically. Mr. Higgins was asked, where is his cell phone? Why does he not have it? Are you aware of the preservation order that was issued by Judge Krupp in the Karen Reed case? And the answer came back that he was given permission to destroy or dispose of his cell phone from victim witness advocate Steve Nelson.
Did he say destroy? I'm trying to remember the testimony. I don't think he said destroy.
I used the disjunctive rather than the conjunctive because I from memory, I can't remember the precise language, but it was conveyed to... I'm told that the precise language was to get rid of, which, you know, would be consistent with what I had
told
said,
he could get rid of, not back. Told he must get rid of.
Correct. In other words, Steve Nelson is overruling a colleague of yours, your predecessor on this case, who issued a preservation order which was never lifted. And yet he stepped into the case, gave authorization that he did not have to give for the disposal of a phone, which is relevant.
Okay, is that the sole issue you want to...
Yes.
The sole issue?
Yes, that's with regard to Mr. Nelson. It's different with regard to Mr. Morris.
What's the Commonwealth's response to that?
I don't believe any of that is accurate. So what counsel is referring to is there was a motion to preserve cell phones. The Commonwealth notified each of the witnesses that were subject to the motions and the orders, sent copies of the motions and the orders, as well as a letter explaining that. There were conversations in regard to that. There was then a subsequent Rule 17 motion filed specifically for the physical phones. There were conversations with those specific witnesses, just advising them that the Rule 17 motion had been filed. They had to, you know, hold on to their phones, things of that nature, explaining what the process was. The hearing was conducted. The Rule 17 motion was denied. And then those witnesses were subsequently informed that the motion had been denied. I believe even from Mr. Higgins's testimony in the federal grand jury the counsel is referring to, he was specifically asked whether or not he had been ever advised by Mr. Nelson, myself, or anyone from our office that he could or should get rid of his phone, and he said no. So I don't know what further needs to be explored on that particular point, as the question was, all of these issues were explored in that particular area, and just because counsel, I think, may not like the answer or doesn't believe that the answer is truthful or whatever, that does not then permit bringing in this witness to testify to what they know is not true.
All right. So, Ms. Giannetti?
We believe that that's a misstatement of what was testified to. I think it probably makes sense for this court to look at his very testimony so that you can make a decision on this, Your Honor.
So here's what I'm going to do. Let's wait and see how Mr. Higgins testifies. Okay? I am not going to order sequestration of Mr. Nelson, and let's see how the testimony is, and if you need to call him, you let me know, and we'll have another hearing on it.
Okay, we'll do. And just to answer an anticipated question from the court, I do not open on this issue.
You cannot open on that issue, Ms. Giannetti. Do you still need the 45 minutes?
That takes away nothing from my opening.
All right, so Jim, I'll start writing. I'll write something on this.
Your Honor, with regard to the sequestration, I think it would be appropriate for the court to order that Mr. Nelson and Mr. Higgins not discuss this issue from here forward.
Are you willing to have that happen, Mr. Lally?
That's fine, Your Honor.
Yeah, I'd order it, but he's willing to do it.
Thank you.
All right, so I just need a minute to write this up.
Sure.
All right. So regarding D.A. Morrissey.
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor. So, Your Honor, the integrity of the investigation that was done in this case is certainly a live and important issue that is part of the defense in this case. I think the court would agree that we're entitled to question the integrity of the investigation, to attack it where we can. And it goes without saying that as the district attorney in Norfolk County, Michael Morrissey is in charge of that investigation. Now, in the usual case, that doesn't necessarily make a district attorney a witness. That would be unusual. There probably have been very few requests to have a district attorney testify in that regard. However, this case is different for two reasons. One is the conflict of interest regarding the Canton Police Department, which Mr. Morrissey was involved in. The second is the manner in which he injected himself into this case personally and made representations that we should be allowed to challenge.
Do you want to play that video?
We haven't made that decision yet. It may be that we elect to play portions of the video. It may be that we just elect to question D.A. Morrissey.
I have to think of other ways, right? That's part of the analysis that I have to follow in the law. So that's why I'm asking.
Of course. And I think before we get to that issue, Your Honor, the conflict issue is what puts him on the stand first. And we learned from the federal materials that former Chief Kenneth Berkowitz notified D.A. Morrissey at a very, very early juncture at 8:30 a.m. A phone call from Chief Berkowitz to D.A. Morrissey notified him that, you know, Kevin Albert is on their force. He's the brother of the homeowner whose lawn contained the lifeless body of John O'Keefe, and that D.A. Morrissey was involved in that decision. He received the information from former Chief Berkowitz and concurred that the Canton police were conflicted out. And then the problem is that the Canton police they had their hands in this investigation, including that day after 8:30 a.m. and going forward. And there were, you know, updates that were provided to Kevin Albert by a trooper under D.A. Morrissey's control, that, you know, there were violations of that sort of conflict of interest taking Canton out of the case that D.A. Morrissey became aware of and that D.A. Morrissey did nothing about. And so in terms of, you know, us being able to, you know, attack, question the integrity of the investigation.
Why can't you do it through other witnesses?
We can, but the buck stops with District Attorney Michael Morrissey. He was the one that was involved at a very early juncture on this precise issue of the conflict, and he became aware that that conflict was violated time and time and time again, and he did nothing. And I believe that that's ripe for cross-examination. And, you know, with regard to his statement to the press, this may even be more compelling, not because of the bias necessarily that he showed. That's not the strongest part. I think it is strong, but it's not the strongest part of his statement. His statement makes factual assertions, some of which we heard for the first time. In that videotaped statement, he announced to everyone, including potential jurors, that Trooper Proctor never reported to the scene on January 29th. That's in direct conflict to police reports that we received from the troopers saying that they reported to the scene. And they're, we would argue, trying to use semantics to get out of that. And now saying that for the first time in my career, I've heard that the crime scene is actually the police station that's across town. That doesn't make any sense. It doesn't pass the straight face test. But those are his own words. And he made himself a witness by uttering those words. And he also talked about his view of what witnesses did or didn't do and whether they're suspects or not suspects. Again, he injected himself into this case. He made himself a witness. And there's really nobody else we can question about his knowledge that he had when he made those statements and why he made those statements. And also the fact that, you know, he was involved in this conflict decision from the beginning. So that's our offer of proof.
Mr. Lally?
I mean, as far as his statements, his opinions are completely irrelevant. And I think what counsel is referring to as proper for cross-examination, they might be. But this would be a witness that they're calling themselves. So for direct examination of your own witness, I think it's improper, number one. Number two, there is ample other avenues to explore this through other witnesses, which counsel can certainly do, you know, as related to whatever.
As the law tells me I have to consider.
Correct. And so, you know, as it pertains to whatever extent the court allows, as far as the Bowdoin defense is concerned, then I think it's fertile ground for cross-examination of other witnesses in respect to that. But as to whatever statements were made or not made by something that someone doesn't have percipient knowledge of, because I don't think anybody's saying that Mr. Morrissey was at 34 Fairview Road. So with all of those things in consideration, I don't think that it's even close to a valid proffer as to why the district attorney or Mr. Nelson need to testify on their own as to any of those things. The last thing I would just note is with respect to Mr. Nelson, the alleged mischaracterization that I made in regard to Mr. Higgins' testimony is actually contained on page 140 of his testimony.
140?
140.
Thank you. Could you read it? Do you have it there? If you don't have it there.
It's more so, I don't know that I'm
Okay. Ready
to.
Okay.
Your Honor, if I could just add one thing that I should have mentioned, which is on this issue of whether there's another issue, another witness that could testify.
Yes, because you did say, yes, we can get it in through other witnesses.
Yes, except the one thing we can't get in through other witnesses, potentially, is the phone call from Chief Berkowitz to D.A. Morrissey, where, as I'm understanding it, there were only two people on that call, and the Commonwealth is seeking to take Chief Berkowitz off the witness stand as well.
Are you? I didn't see anything like that.
No, I'm not seeking to keep him off the witness stand. What I informed counsel is as to his current medical condition, and informed counsel that's why I didn't summons him. But I'm not seeking to
I knew nothing about this.
Prohibit him from testifying.
My understanding was that the prosecution didn't believe that he would be able to testify.
This is the first I'm hearing any of that. All right. So it is a stretch. It is an uphill battle for you, Ms. Giannetti. I will allow you to revisit the ADA Morrissey at the close of the Commonwealth's case. Right now, that your offer of proof is not enough. I'll give you the opportunity to do it again based on the testimony that comes in, and I am not excusing him, or he is not subject to the sequestration order.
Understood, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So, Jim, I'll write something short on that. I've written the part about Mr. Nelson that I'll give you afterwards.
Great. Thank you.
All right. So, when we had our motion in limine hearing, I think we went much of the day that Friday. I don't remember if it was last Friday or the Friday before. I ended that with saying twice, is there anything else we need to discuss regarding housekeeping or logistics? And I was told no by both parties. And then I get a motion the following April 19th. The end of last week, about having an audio, a technology audio visual assistant at council table, but to use, it's much more extensive than what I expected. The Commonwealth filed their motion and it was allowed previously because it happens in every single case in these courtrooms, and the Commonwealth shares their equipment. Please tell me exactly what it is you want to do, and I'm mindful also of the fact that during empanelment, while we were actively on trial in this case, in a critical part of the case, your audiovisual person, who I had never seen, was sitting where you are, Ms. Giannetti, talking to your client. So it sounds like he's taking liberties in this courtroom, and I need to know exactly what you need him for and what it is you intend to do. Keeping in mind also that we're going to be now in a much smaller courtroom. So, tell me, are there any agreements of counsel? Is there any, I know nothing about this, and I asked for information previously so I could have thought about it and, you know, seen a demonstration or heard something. What is it you're asking me to allow?
Thank you, Your Honor. It's very modest. We did mention that we were going to ask for this
But you didn't do it in writing, and you didn't give me specifics.
Your Honor, we asked you, and you then said, put it in writing, then we put it in writing.
But the first time it was brought up was after I had asked about logistics. Go ahead, tell me exactly what it is you want to do.
Okay, so it's a very modest request. Under ordinary circumstances, and we've utilized his services before, he would sit at counsel table, and he would run sort of the AV to make it seamless and smooth for everybody, for the jurors, for the court, for the court reporter, for opposing counsel. He can put monitors at the request of the court, put monitors on the bench, a monitor in front of the court reporter, a monitor in front of the Commonwealth, and a monitor here, all small, relatively inobtrusive monitors. He also can run the system of AV, in other words, putting up evidence. I'm looking at evidence binders that Mr. Lally and I are going to be visiting about through the day today and tomorrow. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of photographs in here, multimedia, that's going to need to be played and shown throughout the course of the trial. Instead of walking back and forth and doing it sort of...
No, and that's what we do every day in this courtroom.
Right, and that's what he does every day in courtrooms as well. I mean, we're asking for is an accommodation exactly like the Commonwealth has. It's just easier for us. If I'm up on a cross-examination or Mr. Iannetti is up on a cross-examination and we say, okay, if... Let's say we've got internal bait stamps that show photograph number 231. He'll know what photograph number 231 is. He'll have an outline that tracks our cross-examination or our direct examination.
So it will be only things that are in evidence or will be coming into evidence? You're not going to do that with disputed?
Absolutely not. We would never do that. If there's anything that's disputed or even remotely controversial, my habit and practice is to... asked to approach the bench, we all walk up, I say, this is what I'm proposing to show the jury, and the court rules on it. But no, all it is just a sort of a facile accommodation of seamlessly showing multimedia or playing an audio or playing a video for the jurors.
All right, what's the Commonwealth's position on this?
Your Honor, given that representation, I mean, that's precisely what we do in every case in which we have either Ms. Gilman or Ms. Crawford or whoever assisting with the trial. If that's what it's limited to, I don't know about the additional monitors or things of that nature, whether or not, especially if we're going to be in courtroom 25, whether that's really necessary. But certainly whatever logistically we have as far as equipment or screens or whatever is obviously... we would fully make accessible to defense counsel as well, as we do in every case.
All right. So, in Suffolk County, there are monitors. The audiovisual equipment is fantastic. There are the jury seats. They're for everybody to see. There's even a way if something is an objected to motion, it can just be seen on the lawyer's screen and the judge's. So the bottom line is, if we had known about this 2 months ago, we would have been able to really put the time into seeing exactly how this works. Ms. Iannetti, I'd like to finish first, and I'll give you the opportunity to speak to Mr. Jackson, to really see how this works, see how we set it up. I can't devote that time to it right now. I don't want a monitor. I'm not allowing, or Madam Court Reporter is fine. We're in that very small courtroom now at your request, so we don't need monitors on the tables. I don't have the time to physically go see how this all looks. Ms. Gilman's here. Perhaps she can speak with your audiovisual person, and then you can all make a presentation to me. But again, this, months ago would have been much better.
Well, I understand the court's concern. This is extremely modest, and it's not going to take a whole lot of presentation. If the court doesn't want a monitor, the court says, I don't want a monitor.
I don't know if I want monitors on those tables so close to the jury.
That's fine. Then the court can say, I don't want monitors that close to the jury. Then what I would do is just use paper copies. When I'm up on direct or cross-examination, I don't want to have to. I can't prepare with the Commonwealth's...
No, I understand that. I don't think he'll fit a counsel table.
I can't speak to that. I think he would. I think we could accommodate him. Or if he doesn't fit right at counsel table, we've also set up... He was on a relatively large case that we had in a small courtroom back in California, and he's set up just behind counsel table, and he's got his own laptop, and nobody else can see it, and he's got a type of screen that you can't see it from angles, so jurors are not going to be seeing anything. But I need to be able to, and Ms. Little and Mr. Iannetti need to be able to prepare with him, and I think the court...
No, I understand that. I don't have a problem with that. It's the four monitors on the tables, one on the bench,
then,
one for the court. We're in a small room.
We won't do that.
And I'm concerned about the amplifying sound. I mean, is it like movie theater sound? It's, again, a tiny room at your request.
He uses very modest speakers that are appropriate for the space. So, for instance, in this space, it would be probably a couple of speakers that are larger so that the jurors can hear or the court can hear. In a small space, he'll just pare it down and use small speakers. And there's a switch. So, for instance, He sets up, he will work with Commonwealth's AV expert, and there's a switch on both tables. When it's my turn, switch, and now...
All right, so is that switch, are you putting wires? I mean, these are all the things that I shouldn't be dealing with today. I mean, we just got Wi-Fi in this building a week ago. I mean, it's not a building that...
I understand.
You know, we can just last minute. It's a beautiful old historic building. We want to keep it that way. So,
and we will not mess anything up. As a matter of fact, I was told that by the Commonwealth that she uses switches, you know, consistently. That's not new technology. It's very simple. It just allows both of us to be able to prepare with the audiovisual portion of the case more seamlessly. That's all. We just want to make it more seamless and more professional for the court and for the jurors.
It would be during your case in chief?
It would be during my cross-examination of every one of the witnesses. I mean, the bulk of the case is going to be the Commonwealth's case in chief.
All right, with exhibits that are already into evidence, you're not trying to enter exhibits during cross-examination?
I mean, unless it's an impeachment that I didn't see coming. But even in that case, my habit and practice, my custom and practice would be to approach, if it's a matter in controversy, or tell the Commonwealth in advance, I'm about to show this photograph. Do you have any issue with it? No, I don't. And then we'll show it. But I would never... The point of it is not to ambush anybody. It's just to make what is going to be shown and what's allowed to be shown seamless and more professional looking.
Does the Commonwealth and Ms. Gilman have an opportunity to spend a little time today to take a look at it and see? I mean, everybody's preparing for trial, obviously. Again, this is, I don't have the time to do it, and I understand if you don't, but...
I think Ms. Gilman can spend some time. She actually had made arrangements to meet Mr. Bates here last Friday, and he didn't appear when we were told he was going to be here. So, but I'm happy to have Ms. Gilman.
Ms. Gilman, are you willing to spend some time today? Thank you.
By the way, just Mr. Bates' defense. Yes, he was supposed to come last Friday. He was told he couldn't come because he hadn't gotten permission from this court yet.
Okay.
We did not.
Well, that makes sense, frankly.
I just didn't want there to be a sort of a hanging chad where that's concerned. He didn't leave.
Well, especially where he didn't start out well, right? Being at counsel table during impanelment.
I understand that. And he's been told that that was inappropriate and obviously would never happen again.
All right. So some sort of ground rules. Only one counsel, whoever's doing the cross-examination of the witness, objects. Just one, not all of you. It's not a tag team. So one person objects. If you want to approach the witness, you must ask permission. It's sidebar. There will only be one person talking again, and it'll follow with whoever does the examination. Many times I allow counsel to discuss things, and many times I call directly on maybe appellate counsel or counsel who's been the big law person. So you can ask me for permission for that. And no basis for your objection. You just simply object. That's it. And if we need to see you at sidebar, we'll see you at sidebar. But I don't want a whole litany of reasons why the testimony you think is inadmissible. So those are pretty standard rules. I'd like to see counsel at sidebar regarding a jury issue.
Just a second. Hold on for a second.
More raw courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed is coming up from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Press subscribe so you don't miss a minute.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help, you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help, you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help, you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help, you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.